Hello everyone, welcome back to Tantra's Mantra, where we go behind and beyond the tech news headlines. I am your host Prakash Sangam, founder and principal of Tantra Analyst. The tech world is still going gaga over AI. There is something new almost every day. Now, I've done many episodes on AI as well on our podcast. Actually, the news cycle, or the hype cycle as some might call it, started with ChatGPT going public, which was GenAI, generative AI. Then we started hearing about action AI or agentic AI. Then recently physical AI, which is for robots. So then the question is, what is the next buzzword that we are going to hear? Well, we are starting to hear about AGI, which stands for Artificial General Intelligence. Although we are hearing about that a little bit more, it's been around for some time. Then the question is, what is it? How is it different from the many AIs we have now? When is it going to be available, and so on? Lots of questions, I'm sure, on the topic. To talk all about those, we have a special guest with us today. And he's no regular AI expert, but the person who came up with this very term, AGI. And that is Peter Voss, currently the founder, CEO, and chief scientist at IGO. Peter, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks for having me.
All right. So as I mentioned, I mean, although people are hearing about AGI a little bit more now, you know, it's been around for some time, right? And you've been working on it for a long time. So, you know, in your illustrious career of more than 20, 30 years, could you explain a little bit about your background and so on? I'm sure, you know, you can go on for a very long time, but just for in terms of AGI, you know, how you started and so on.
Yes, sure. I'll try and keep it short. So, you know, I started out as an electronics engineer and started my own electronics company. Mm-hmm. Then I fell in love with software and my company turned into a software company and actually developing an ERP software system. Mm-hmm. And that company was quite successful. We went from the garage to 400 people and did an IPO. Uh-huh. So that was really exciting. But it's when I exited the company, it gave me the freedom to think about how can we actually build software that can think and learn and reason and adapt the way human intelligence allows us to. Mm-hmm. So I embarked on a five-year journey of deeply studying what intelligence entails, what makes human intelligence special. Mm-hmm. You know, how do children learn? What do IQ tests measure? How does our intelligence differ from animal intelligence? What had been done in the field of AI? And many questions like that. You know, what is consciousness? What is free will? How do we know anything? Mm-hmm. So I studied all of these different aspects and then came up with a design for a thinking machine. Uh-huh. Then coming to the term AGI around 2001, 2002, mm-hmm. I got together with a few other people who also came to the point where they said, the time is ripe now for us to start building thinking machines, which mm-hmm. was the original dream of AI from, you know, 70 years ago. Mm-hmm. Three of us actually then coined the term artificial general intelligence to distinguish ourselves, our efforts from what everybody else was doing, which was really narrow AI, mm-hmm. you know, building machines that can play chess and become world chess champion even, or container optimization or medical diagnosis or, you know, some narrow field, mm-hmm. whereas artificial general intelligence mm-hmm. is all about systems that can learn by themselves mm-hmm. really anything that a smart human can learn.
Okay. Yeah. So the way differentiating it from GenAI and the other things that we are hearing now a little bit more than before is basically, you know, throw in a bunch of data, let them identify trends and apply that training, if you will, to do something very similar to what they have been trained on, right? Whereas the AGI is, it is learning like a human brain does, right? Not just, you know, crunching a lot of data, but actual learning and like a human does. Am I saying that right? Or?
Yeah, absolutely. That is sort of the crucial difference between, you know, what Gen AI is doing and what AGI needs to do. Mm-hmm. In Gen AI, you collect all of the data up front, you know, now 30 trillion pieces of information, you number crunch them, hundreds of millions of dollars worth.
Yeah.
And then you have a model, but that model is read only. It's fixed.
Mm-hmm.
It's cast in stone. It cannot, the model itself cannot learn new things. Yeah. Now you can have external databases and things, but the model itself cannot change.
Mm-hmm.
That's why they have to throw them away and train a new one. I mean,
yeah.
if they could update the model, they clearly wouldn't be spending all the time, all the money to train new models. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the serious limitations. You know, you wouldn't, human assistant, for example, or worker wouldn't be that useful if they couldn't learn on the job by themselves. So, you know, large language models need to be trained with massive amounts of training data, and they always need a human in the loop to kind of correct them, you know, to tune the system, to prompt engineer it, to build the external databases and so on. So they really cannot learn autonomously by themselves on an ongoing basis. So that's the big difference between what AGI promises versus what we currently have in large language models.
Yeah, I mean, you can still do a little bit of optimization, fine-tuning of the models and so on. But I mean, it is kind of fixed to what function it is trained on and what data is trained on, right? That's what you're saying.
Exactly. It's limited to what has been fine-tuned to do. And also importantly, even that fine-tuning requires a human. It requires human intelligence to say, well, what do I need to tune it to? What data do I need to get? What data structure? What prompts?
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't learn autonomously the way a human would. You know, I mean, a smart human, you can put them into a new job as an intern for software, for customer support, for accounting, for anything,
mm-hmm.
and they can learn on the job. They know what they don't know. They know when to ask questions, and they can learn incrementally as they go along, and you know, and basically become better and better. And inherently, large language models can't do that. There's also kind of another succinct way to look at the difference.
Mm-hmm.
Our human brains require 20 watts of power.
Mm-hmm.
And a child can learn with something like, you know, 1 or 2 million words.
Yeah.
Whereas large language models need gigawatts of power. You know, they're recommissioning nuclear power stations to train them.
Yeah.
And they need trillions of training words. So it's literally the way humans learn is with a million times less data.
Yeah.
And that's just a profound difference.
Yeah. I mean, a brain is the most power efficient processor out there, right? So, I mean, in terms of GenAI, we know there are transformer models and so on. How does AGI really work?
Yeah, so that is kind of a big question right now. You know, you have more and more people. There was a recent survey done by AI researchers, and I believe it was 84% of them said that large language models will not get us to AGI.
Mm-hmm.
So there's already a consensus of large language models are not the path to AGI. In fact, Jan LeCun, the chief scientist of Meta, or Facebook,
mm-hmm.
puts it very succinctly, very strongly. He says large language models are an off-ramp to AGI, a distraction, a dead end. So he puts it very forcefully.
Mm-hmm.
And he actually tells the students not to bother learning generative AI because that's not the future.
Mm-hmm.
So there's, I think, a general consensus coming across that large language models are not the future.
Okay.
But the question is, what is the future is much less clear.
Mm-hmm.
Now, our company and myself, you know, we have a clear answer to that, but it's not something that's generally accepted.
Mm-hmm.
And it's what DARPA calls the third wave of AI,
mm-hmm.
or cognitive AI.
Okay.
So it starts from first principles saying, what is important in human intelligence? What makes human intelligence so powerful? That's your starting point.
Mm-hmm.
Not how much data do we have and how much compute do we have. The starting point is understanding intelligence and then building a system that has the characteristics required for human-like intelligence, which means to be able to learn autonomously.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, so that's the third wave of AI, or cognitive AI.
Mm-hmm.
And the way we are implementing that in particular is with what we call INSA, an integrated neurosymbolic architecture.
Mm-hmm.
So we basically combine the best features of neural networks and the best features of symbolic logic reasoning in one integrated system. And that is the approach we are taking.
And what is a simpler and easier way to explain it with an example, maybe?
Well, it does get fairly technical, but you know, large language models, as we know, you take all of the data you have up front, you know, the 30 trillion pieces of information, you number crunch them for weeks or months on end, and then you have a neural network that represents the sort of statistical correlations between all of the data that you have.
Correct.
Now, with the cognitive AI, with our approach, we have a vector graph database. So we have a database that encodes all of the relationships between different concepts, different ideas, different words that you learn. But it does it incrementally. So every new sentence you come across, every new action that you come across is now encoded in this graph database. But there's some unique technical challenges as to make this graph database efficient enough and optimize it in a way that you need it. For example, our graph database is literally 1,000 times faster than any commercially available graph database. So we have optimized it to do that. So you have this knowledge graph that encodes all of the knowledge and skills, and that is basically the backbone of the system. And it can accumulate new knowledge, create new generalizations, have new insights. And that is really what our AGI approach is.
Okay, so let me take an example of, say, image classification, right? So is it possible to differentiate between these two approaches, like how a Gen AI does? If I train a model with, say, millions of dog pictures, right? So I present another a little bit similar but a little bit different dog picture as well. Then Gen AI basically looks at all this training, compares, maybe, you know, trend matching and so on, decides with certain confidential level that this is a dog versus a cat. How does that work in AGI?
Right. It's a good question. So again, going back to first principles of a child, you could show a child a picture of a giraffe. If it's never seen a giraffe before, you can show it one picture of a giraffe and it'll be able to recognize a giraffe, a toy giraffe from the back, from the front, you know, the small one, a big one. It doesn't need hundreds or thousands of pictures of giraffes to be able to classify them. And that is basically the way our system works as well. It can learn the features of a giraffe that make it different from other animals and things that you've seen, and do that in a cognitive way so that it really only needs to have one picture of a giraffe to learn. And that's kind of really the big difference versus a statistical, where you need lots of examples and have sort of the statistical correlation, versus a cognitive, where you're recognizing different features of the system and you can compare them to other things you already know. And it can learn that instantaneously, you know, like a child.
Yeah.
You show it a picture of a giraffe and it now learns it, it will be able to recognize a giraffe. So it really is very, very different.
Yeah, so I mean, I'm trying to make it as simple as possible without losing the technical authenticity of it. So, you know, it would be right to say that in Gen AI, it is more of a statistical trend matching of so many different aspects between what I learned and what I've been presented match. So this must be it. Whereas in AGI, what you're capturing is not the trends and such, but a character of what is defining a giraffe. So it is much less data than just trend matching, and then you're comparing that to what has been presented. Is that
correct? It's, you know, in Gen AI, I mean, depending on how the system is trained and that, but ultimately it's the sort of the pixels that you're comparing rather than coherent features and how they join together. So there's a big difference. But let me talk about kind of a practical difference and just how important or how beneficial AGI is and how much more powerful it is than large language models. Once you have a single AGI, that is, say, has all the knowledge, that has had all the training to, say, a high school graduate or maybe a college graduate, you know, a smart college graduate, let's say, mm-hmm. with general knowledge, mm-hmm. you can now take that AGI and literally put it into a call center, put it on a computer in a call center, and it can learn like a human by itself.
Yeah.
It can read the manuals, it can ask questions, can listen to some customer calls, and it can, like a human, like, you know, if you or I were put in a call center, we would learn to do the job by asking questions, reading things, and then actually taking calls. And we would know when we can't handle something. We would ask a supervisor to come over or somebody more experienced. We would ask questions. Mm-hmm. And that's it. That same AGI you could put into an accounting firm. Mm-hmm. And same again. It could, you know, study the material, do tests, learn, and, you know, then start helping people and become an accountant or a programmer or any of those, without a human having to assemble massive amounts of data, fine-tuning prompts, building rags, and you know, all of the engineering that has to be done. And as the job changes, let's say, again, in the call center job, let's say there are new business rules, or there's a new product, mm-hmm. or there's a snowstorm somewhere, mm-hmm. you know, something changes, mm-hmm. the system can adapt on the fly. You don't now have to, again, fine-tune it or, you know, collect new data and do it. So it really is profoundly different in what it can ultimately AGI will be able to do.
Okay. You still have to train it, right? But not as a massive amount of data that you do with the LLMs, right? And how do you train it? Is training different, I'm assuming, than
LLMs? Well, the thing is, you really only have to train it once,
okay,
to have that general knowledge, to be that, you know, college graduate, that general knowledge college graduate, you know, maybe with this different STEM subject that, you know, knows some mathematics, some science, and, you know, language and so on.
Yeah.
But you really only have to train that AGI once. From there on, it can learn by itself. It can learn autonomously. And that's basically the big difference. Now, how do we get to that college graduate level?
Yeah.
Well, that's what our company is working on right now, is we teach it like a child from the ground up. We teach it language and reasoning like a 3-year-old, 4-year-old, 5-year-old, mm-hmm. that it can have ever increasing levels of sophistication in its language understanding and reasoning ability.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, as it grows up, sort of as it goes up that ladder, it'll be able to learn more and more by itself. You know, a 3-year-old can't learn that much by itself,
yeah.
whereas a 10-year-old can already, you know, read books and so on. By the time you're 14 or 16 and certainly 18, you can just hit the books and study things and learn largely by yourself.
Yeah.
So we just have to train up the system to become competent enough to be able to learn by itself.
Yes,
and, you know, that will, yeah.
Basically, you're training the model how to learn, not teaching it, right?
That's a very good way of putting it.
Okay, got it. So the issue with human brain is it takes a lot of time, not a lot of energy and data, but it is slow process. So with your algorithms and processes, you are speeding that up, I'm assuming?
Oh, yes, it's much faster than a human.
Yeah.
I mean, first of all, as a human, there's only a limited number of hours a day that you can learn.
Yeah.
And, you know, humans get distracted by all sorts of things, and especially in puberty. And, you know,
yeah.
some of us are in puberty for, you know, 50 years. You know, so you have all these distractions and, you know, you basically can't learn in a very concentrated way.
Yeah.
Whereas with AGI, it can learn 24/7. It can learn at a higher speed.
Yeah.
And also the curriculum we're giving it is optimized for an AGI to learn very efficiently.
Yeah.
So instead of taking 15 years to get up, or 20 years or whatever, to get up to college graduate level,
mm-hmm.
You know, we're looking at a few years maximum. And then as we figure out exactly how to do that efficiently, you'd be able to train something from scratch in probably, you know, a few weeks.
Yeah.
It's really then just a matter of how fast the processor is and how effective your algorithm is. But you don't need to keep training them. Basically, you only need to get it done once, because the system can, you know, anything that it didn't learn correctly early on, mm-hmm. it'll be able to correct, the same way as, you know, a human can. If we were taught something or we picked up some wrong knowledge early on in life, you know, later on we studied something and thought, oh, okay, that's actually not the way the world works, you know, and okay, and you basically update your model, so to speak.
Okay. So you basically, once you have that learning, you kind of copy it over, and maybe the newer version of it can learn something different. But so you kind of build a basic learning model and then let it grow on different expertise.
Specialize. Exactly. Okay. That's right. Okay. And you can do that at different levels. So a very powerful example here is that if you have one AGI that now gets from this, you know, a college graduate level and trains itself, say, to be a PhD level cancer researcher. Mm-hmm. Now, once you have that one AGI that has this competence, you can now make a million copies of it.
Correct.
And you have a million PhD level cancer researchers, which can then specialize and pursue different avenues, you know, and pool their knowledge, and without egos getting in the way, they can share knowledge and transfer knowledge much more effectively. So the acceleration we'll have in scientific research, for example, will be phenomenal.
Yeah, interesting. Interesting. So, I mean, this is, as you mentioned, this is going on for some time. Why is it critical now? Why are we hearing more about it now? Is it because of the AI hype, or is the technology at a tipping point where, you know, a lot of things that were just concepts are able to be implemented in physical form now?
Yeah, it's a good question. You know, we coined the term AGI in 2002.
Yeah.
And I believe we could have made good progress towards AGI even 20 years ago. Uh-huh. But there just wasn't the funding. It was just, you know, people thought it was too way out and too far out in the future. Uh-huh. So it was difficult for any of the projects working on AGI to actually get enough momentum and funding to make progress.
Yeah.
Now, with, you know, 2 years ago when ChatGPT hit the scene, suddenly everybody became very, very excited, and for good reason, because it's really quite phenomenal what these large language models can do.
Yeah.
So now there are massive amounts of money being thrown at it. I mean, you know, recently the startup that had $2 billion seed round,
yeah,
you know, I mean, yeah, no product, no, you know, no revenue and no particular roadmap. And
I think you're talking about the one started by CTO of OpenAI, yes. Mira,
yeah, right?
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
you know, there's obviously a lot of excitement, and large language models, ChatGPT, in a way show us we seem to be so close to AGI. You can almost taste it, you know, the way they interact, the way they can summarize and do magical things.
Yeah.
It's really very, very impressive. So on the one hand, we seem to be so close to AGI. On the other hand, we seem to be so far from it because they cannot learn by themselves. They hallucinate and, you know, all the problems that they do have. So I think now there is kind of a much better understanding of the value of AGI, mm-hmm, you know, that it is a multi-trillion dollar opportunity, mm-hmm, and how it can help humanity in so many different ways. So there is much, much more excitement about it. What is lacking at the moment is really a clear vision of what will get us to AGI. Now, we have that clear vision, but, you know, we're a small company, and uh-huh, there isn't consensus on what is the right path to get to AGI. But definitely the time is ripe now with the excitement generated by large language models.
Yeah. And you think it's possible to see this in action with commercial use cases and so on in next, like, couple of years, 5 years?
Oh, absolutely. I don't believe there's any significant barrier from a hardware point of view. I think the hardware, mm-hmm, we either already have enough hardware power or we soon will, you know, in the next 2 years. It's really a matter of doing the additional software engineering, mm-hmm, to build a system that can really learn as flexibly as it needs to and form concepts on the go, and, you know, what we are basically working on. But absolutely, I believe that within a few years, 2-3 years, we could have full adult level AGI if the right resources are are directed at the right kind of projects, the right kind of approaches.
I see. And in terms of hardware, today's mix of CPU, GPU, NPU, DSPs, are they enough? Yeah, or do we need different kind of hardware for this?
So we're currently doing all of our work on standard off-the-shelf computers, not even very, just ordinary desktop computers.
Okay.
We're not even using GPUs right now.
Okay.
We'll probably, as we scale up, we'll start using GPUs, but nothing very fancy. So they'll be able to run on a standard off-the-shelf computer. Now, there will be possibilities to optimize it by having, FPGAs or, some custom hardware that will... You can always do it. I mean, you can always get like 100x or 1000x or even 10,000x improvement by designing hardware that is optimized for some particular, software algorithm. So there will be possibilities for optimization, but I don't see that as essential to actually get to full adult level AGI with basically off-the-shelf hardware.
Okay. And where are you with IGO? What stage are you in? In development.
Yeah, and so until about 8 months ago, we still had a commercial operation. So we had our proto AGI technology that we deployed in the call center very effectively. Last year on Valentine's Day, our customer 1-800-Flowers, we replaced 3,000 agents that they normally had to hire for 2 weeks. They have this massive rush of a Valentine's Day period.
Yeah.
And using our technology, we replaced 3,000 agents very successfully.
Uh-huh.
Now, we decided 8 months ago to put our commercial business on hold because it was really too distracting, where we really needed our company to focus on increasing the learning ability of our system. So that's what we've been doing. But, we're a small team. We're only 15 people in total.
Uh-huh.
So right now we are looking for a Series A to basically scale our team up and accelerate the development so that we can get to full adult level, learning and reasoning ability, we believe, within 2 years.
Okay. And I'm assuming, I know, as you mentioned as well, all the big AI players, be it Google, OpenAI, Amazon, Meta, they are also looking at this as well, right? So how do you carve out your own space when you are,
well,
not directly competing, but in the same space as these behemoths?
Well, actually, they're not at all looking at the same thing because they all seem to be stuck. The expertise they have is always with big data, big compute.
Okay.
Their way of thinking about the problem is we need more compute, we need more data, we need scaling, and somehow magically, we'll overcome the limitations. I mean, there are the rare public voices like Jan LeCun who says he's done with Gen AI, but really pretty much all the players in the large language model space are still pursuing the sort of big data pre-training approach.
Uh-huh.
And it's, that's what they know. That's a hammer they've got. So to them, everything looks like a nail.
Yeah.
And I think the transition from second wave large language models AI to third wave AI, cognitive AI, is much more likely to happen through new companies that don't have that history of, their big data thinking. So they're really not competitors in this race.
Yeah.
It's just such a different mindset, whether you're trying to brute force the problem or whether your starting point is understanding intelligence and focusing on building the key requirements of human intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
The absurdity is, because we don't need massive amounts of data, massive amounts of compute, the amount of money we need to get to AGI is also a tiny fraction. It's like a rounding error. I mean, we're looking at $25 million to, hire another 50 people for 2 years. Yeah. Talking $25 million as opposed to billions and billions of, or hundreds of billions of dollars.
Yeah.
It's a completely different mindset, and it'll be interesting to see how over the coming months and years, those large companies will basically come to the conclusion that they have a dead end, like Jan LeCun says,
Yeah, and you said a third phase of AI. So how are you defining? Is first phase regular machine learning, And then second was Gen AI, and third is cognitive AI. Is that how you're
No, actually, it's something that DARPA came up with a few years ago. They call it the three waves of AI.
Okay.
And the first wave of AI is actually what people now call good old-fashioned AI.
Okay.
So that is basically, you know, logic-based, primarily logic-based systems.
Okay.
So IBM's Deep Blue World Chess Champion would be a good example.
Yeah.
Expert systems would be an example. That's the first wave.
Yeah.
And the second wave is really deep learning, machine learning, Gen AI, you know, all the big data statistical approaches.
Okay.
Basically, when people figured out how they could get neural networks to do very impressive things.
Yeah, okay, got it. So there's so much of investment already going into Gen AI. Don't you think that kind of becomes an impediment to what you're trying to do in terms of, you know, without requiring this huge amount of data and investment to get to this AI? Do you worry that because there is already so much of investment by these big companies, you know, they'll brute force from Gen AI somehow a linkage or a shortcut to AGI? You think that's impossible?
Yeah, I believe it's impossible. And there are good theoretical reasons for that.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, first of all, just the word GPT.
Yeah.
Now, G is generative. It makes up stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's why you have hallucinations.
Yeah.
And that's inherent. In fact, there's quite a couple of papers coming out now saying hallucinations are getting worse, not better,
mm-hmm.
as they scale these things up. So hallucinations will be there. But more importantly, GPT, the P, is pre-trained.
Yeah.
And that's the Achilles heel.
Yeah.
You cannot have proper high-level human intelligence with something that cannot learn and adapt autonomously in real time, incrementally. And the transformer technology and similar, any variations of that reinforcement learning or, you know, any of these big data learning approaches lock you into this bulk training.
Yeah.
They lock you into the requirement that you need to have all of your training data up front and number crunch it. You can't get away from that. So, and that's, again, why I agree with Jan LeCun. You know, he says that he's done with large language models because they are dead end. You know, they cannot be tweaked. So, no, it, you know, now there's still a lot of money to be raised, a lot of money to be made, a lot of hype. You know, you have all these consultants making a lot of money trying to get large language models implemented in different companies,
mm-hmm.
and not with very great success. But, you know, there's this whole hype machine. There's so many people interested in making money out of this and making largely false promises in terms of how it can do all this magical automation in companies. But as we're getting reports back from enterprise companies saying this isn't really working very well, you know, it's not reliable enough, needs a human in the loop, we can't have this customer facing, and it's costing a fortune to engineer. So this bubble is going to burst, undoubtedly. It's been oversold, but there's still, you know, it still has a lot of momentum to go.
Yeah, I mean, it's so much of investment has gone in. I mean, there are some return on investment that they're seeing, but it is still a money pit, Jania, as such, in terms of investment. So it's more of a, you know, funds inward thing, and we still have to see what the return is going to be on it. So yeah, we'll see that. And going back to this, you know, AGI training like a human, how do you manage and control that learning? You have enough knobs, you know, in terms of where it should stop learning or what it should learn, what should not learn, and so on. You know, humans are complex, and you know the ingenuity of human brain is because it has no controls as such, right? So, you know, how do you manage this dichotomy? You only want to make it learn as much as you want to, but not more, not less.
No, that's not really the case. I mean, the system inherently needs to know, you know, like you train a human, of what is appropriate to say and do in a given context.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what is appropriate to tell a child, what is appropriate to tell an expert in a particular system.
Yeah.
But the whole training question is quite interesting, because half of the people in our company are what we call AI psychologists.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually a profession I invented, but their job is to come up with the curriculum for our system. Uh-huh. So they have a curriculum of teaching the system and then testing it. So we also write the tests or use existing tests for children. So we're training and testing the system on an ongoing basis. Yeah. And as it develops, we obviously will also make sure that it has the right kind of balance of being helpful to the user, but also knowing what is appropriate. So that's part of the kind of curriculum of giving it that ability to have the right conversation. And that's really the reference point is always how humans learn. Mm-hmm. And, you know, how humans, we learn context, we learn what is appropriate in different circumstances. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there are a lot of similarities in teaching an AGI and teaching a human.
Yeah. I mean, but there are also bad humans, right? Criminals and so on. So my question is more on, you know, this doomsday scenario of AI controlling humans and vice versa. If the machines will start learning like humans, develop expertise like humans, start behaving like humans, then how the outcome can be different than how the humanity is now, right?
Yeah, it's a very interesting and a big question. I mean, first of all, really civilization has been getting better and better as people become more rational. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I think we'd all rather live now than 100 years ago or 1,000 years ago or 10,000 years ago.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's kind of one point. So I think it's pointing at humans as they become more knowledgeable, more competent, more rational, they actually also become more moral, better. But there are other dimensions to that. Unfortunately, Hollywood has sort of pre-programmed us that AIs are the bad guys and AI will kill us. You know, I mean, that's kind of what makes for a good story.
Yeah.
But it's not actually the reality, because there is a very big difference when I say the teaching is similar to a human. Mm-hmm. But that is only as far as cognition is concerned, as far as language and reasoning is concerned.
Okay.
As far as emotions are concerned, AIs are completely different. Mm-hmm. You know, humans, we are driven basically by our genes for survival and reproduction.
Uh-huh.
I mean, that's really the fundamental. Otherwise, we wouldn't be here having this conversation if we weren't.
Yeah.
So humans inherently are driven by reproduction and survival.
Uh-huh.
But that also causes a lot of the problems, you know, that causes wars and jealousy and anger and, you know, a lot of things like that really are byproduct of these primitive drives that we have.
Mm-hmm.
And an AGI will simply not have them. An AGI doesn't have that biological substrate and that reptile brain. It doesn't have a drive to reproduce or to protect itself even.
Yeah.
So from that point of view, you shouldn't think of it like a human and that it will, you know, want to take over the world or protect its ego or, you know, get jealous or something like that. It's just not going to happen.
Through this learning process, machines will not develop emotions? Because, I mean, if they want to, like taking your chatbot example, if they want to respond to a question by a customer like a human being, they have to, one, understand the emotion of that customer, you know, whether it's angry, whether he or she is, you know, what state of mind he or she is in, which one is that they have, the machines have to understand that emotion. For them to understand that emotion, they have to know what emotion is, in which case they may develop those emotions as well, right? Don't you think?
No, actually, it's a very good question. And the answer is no.
Mm-hmm.
There's a difference between feeling an emotion and being driven by it and recognizing it.
Okay.
You know, you could take, for example, a good psychologist.
Mm-hmm.
A good psychologist can totally understand and empathize with your emotions, can recognize them and know how to respond to them.
Yeah.
You know, an angry customer or somebody depressed or suicidal or whatever it might be.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, a psychologist isn't going to feel those emotions themselves at that time.
Okay. That's a good point. Yeah.
So having the emotions and affecting them, how you motivates you to act in the world, is quite different from recognizing the emotions and knowing how to respond to the other person having those emotions.
Okay. And you're saying as part of that learning, they will not learn developing how emotions.
To recognize and how to deal with different human emotions.
Okay. All right. That's a good point. So you're saying, you know, we have seen humanoids nowadays, right? Any show you go to, there is a humanoid, of course, you know, being controlled by a human being. But you will not see these humanoids with AGI becoming cyborgs and becoming Skynets, and you're seen in the Hollywood movies.
Yeah, well, no, again, they simply will not have the motivation. Now, can humans use AGI for bad purposes?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But as long as you have more good guys than bad guys, and that is typically the case,
yeah,
you know, the good guys will have AGIs to help us protect us from people who try to use AGI for bad purposes. And there's also another protection in, but this comes to a very subtle philosophical question that I've actually studied and written about. Mm-hmm. And that I believe is that having an AGI mm-hmm. will also make people better people, make people have better decisions. And I can very quickly go over an example here.
Sure.
All your listeners here will have gone through 9/11, or certainly will know about 9/11.
Yeah.
And the human limitations there are very, very clear.
Mm-hmm.
So the first thing is we tend to act emotionally.
Mm-hmm.
You know, after 9/11, we've got to hit back at somebody. You know, we've got to go to Iraq or Afghanistan or whatever. We've got to hit back at somebody.
Yeah,
that's an emotional reaction.
Yeah.
Now, an AGI is not going to act emotionally.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it'll say, okay, this is terrible. Let's think about this, you know. The second thing is humans are not very good at getting objective data.
Mm-hmm.
You know, weapons of mass destruction, check. You know, we don't have the time, the patience, the skill to really do research and say, well, is that true?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we tend to also suffer from our preconceived ideas and of, you know, what we like to hear and so on. Again, an AGI will be much better at doing the analysis and saying, okay, what are the facts? You know, are there weapons of mass destruction or not? Or what is the whole story? So it's a second thing. We'll have better informed decisions.
Mm-hmm.
And the third one is related to that. And that is, we are not very good at logical thinking.
Yeah.
So, you know, even if you say, okay, we should go to Iraq and weapons of mass destructions were there, we should ask ourselves, what is the outcome? If mm-hmm. we achieve our objective, will that actually serve our purpose?
Yeah.
You know, so to think things through, or is there a better way of achieving the objective that we want to achieve? Again, AGI will be much better at thinking through logically the repercussions of a particular action and coming up with better alternatives. So anybody who has an AGI as an assistant, as a helper, as a guide will actually become a better person because they're much less likely to make the mistakes of emotional action with too little information or action that haven't been thought through properly. So in a way, anybody who uses AGI, it'll be like they have a little angel on their shoulder.
So you're saying it's basically all the positives of a human brain in terms of logic and intelligence, but without the baggage of emotions, you're saying?
Yeah, without the baggage of the sort of negative emotions. Exactly.
All right. That's a great point to close our discussion on it. Thank you very much, Peter. This was a fascinating discussion, and I'm sure, you know, we'll discuss about AGI quite a bit as we move forward.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, thank you again for all of your insight and coming on to Tantra's Mantra. You know, as I mentioned, there's a lot to be learned and a lot to see in AGI. I'll be closely looking at it, and maybe, you know, we can meet again here on this podcast a few months or next year when we think AGI has made another major step, right?
Yes, indeed.
So, folks, that's all we have for now. Hope you found this discussion informative and useful. If so, please hit like, subscribe to the podcast on whatever platform you're listening this on. I'll be back soon with another episode, putting light on another interesting tech subject. Bye-bye for now.